and assure success.
Vinnie Eastwood Show, without Vinnie, as it stands. I believe Vinnie's just resetting his connection there, but he'll be with us in a few moments. So we're flying solo here at the moment. I'm your host for the next 5 minutes anyway, Will. And yeah, I mean, what's in the news? Well, nothing new really. It's just the same stuff revolving, isn't it? Same stuff circulating. Some friends of ours on Facebook, listeners to the show, were postulating for a moment there that the Bilderberg Group could be a positive influence on the planet. And, you know, I'm totally for freedom of speech and freedom of ideas, and people should debate things. I mean, it's not just set in stone that anyone in the upper echelons of this establishment globally is evil. It's not just set in stone, but it's a... It's a vast likelihood. But then when you look into the founding of the Bilderberg Group, 1954 in Evian in France, I believe, by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who was a member of the Nazi Party, and, you know, Queen Beatrix and just all these types involved. I mean, if anyone had any doubt of the Bilderberg Group, it should just be confirmed by their membership. And then when you look over and you look to a lot of the crossover between the trilaterals and the Bilderberg, it's just totally incriminating if you ask me. And then also in the States, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations, they draw from the same pool. It becomes quite easy to sort of paint a picture here of what's going on, that there are domestic think tanks such as the boys in Tavistock in London, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and then they have their holding companies in all their colonies and former colonies, and that's the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States. And then they have a Asia-Pacific, European sort of coming together of that and being the Trilateral Commission. I mean, and just to look at the Trilateral Commission's logo, a stylized 666, it tells a story. It's the same as the CFR using a naked man riding on a pale horse with the Latin for ubiquitous underneath it, doing a hooked horns logo on top. I mean, Bilderberg's not good, folks. Look into them a bit harder. Don't give them the benefit of the doubt.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and then incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we'll be right back after the break.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no.
Tell me.
There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
And welcome back, ladies and gents, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly coordinated through the various underground activities of GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a Kiwi Collaborator segment. We haven't had one for a long time, quite frankly. It's all my fault. But there's somebody we've had before who I really wanted to hear from again, considering that she's been a few places since last we talked on the show. Her name's Maria Bradshaw, and if anybody knows anything about pharmaceutical drugs being one of the wonderful weapons of war of the New World Order and such, it's Maria Bradshaw from what's the organization you're from, love, again?
From CASPER.
CASPER, that's right. Casper, they're trying to prevent you from turning into a ghost.
That's the one.
So give us a breakdown. You've been around the world just recently.
Well, what I've done...
Some description of conference, is it?
Yeah, I went over to Los Angeles to an award ceremony for people who were, you know, have made a real difference in fighting pharmaceutical companies, psychiatry, and what they're doing to people with psychotropic drugs. And then I stayed on in the States for a couple of weeks and, you know, had no plans, I had no accommodation booked, didn't know what I was going to do, but I just wanted to take advantage of any opportunity that came up, and heaps of them did. So I've been flying across the United States, meeting with all sorts of people, families who've lost kids to suicide, lawyers, political activists, to bring back as much stuff as I can to New Zealand so that we can take this on head on.
By taking it head on, you mean what? The pharmaceutical industry, the government? I mean, how do you take on directly an opponent of this size?
Well, in the United States, it's been shown that families with, you know, with the passion that we feel and with a lot of tenacity and commitment, can get these people into court and can win lawsuits against them. And, you know, the fantastic thing about winning a lawsuit is not the settlement or the payout or whatever. It's the fact that finally they're having to answer some questions and be held accountable for what they've done, for the murder of children. And it also, of course, sends a really strong message to their colleagues and provides a strong deterrent effect.
So it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts or something along those lines, you know? You take a few pricks at some sensitive places and then the whole rest of them get scared of getting touched again.
Hey, look, my aim in New Zealand is that every time somebody pulls out a prescription pad to write a prescription for a psychotropic drug for a child who doesn't need one and is likely to be killed by it, that they're going to think, shit, this kid might have a stroppy mum like Torin's mum.
We also have FCC regulations, by the way, so the language has to be, like, for a G-rated audience.
I apologise, that won't happen again.
Thank you very much.
They think, goodness, this child might have a stroppy mum like Torin's mum. I'd better be cautious and careful about prescribing these drugs to this child.
Now, isn't that interesting? A cautious and careful approach to giving drugs to children. Does that sound unreasonable or somewhat? No. There's something inherently wrong with that. And in fact, you know, maybe we should just drug all the children so that they can all have, like, horrible, debilitating diseases at the very least.
Well, you know, that is a reality in a certain sector in New Zealand in terms of the thinking of psychiatrists. We've got people here who believe that these drugs should be given to all children because they prevent mental illnesses, and that we should do that before we get to the stage of treating them. We've got psychiatrists in New Zealand who are saying that 12 to 15% of 10-week-old babies are mentally ill. There's a huge focus in this country on infant mental health. And so it is not, you know, outside of the realms of the possible to think that we will at some point be medicating all children, you know, in some sort of warped thinking that it will prevent them from becoming mentally ill.
Well, hold on a second. don't drugs actually cause mental illness? And it's all on purpose as well anyway. This is just kind of destabilize society, make everybody these warped out zombies who could like crack at any minute. Makes everybody freaked out about what the heck is going on everywhere. It causes an immense amount of pain, fear, death, suffering, convenient distractions from any description of real political change or maybe trying to save humanity from getting freaking slaughtered in the near future. These people are just like workings of of this enormous vapid spider that is consuming this planet and consuming all life and light that's on it, you know. And it's such an infuriating topic, this, the drugging of children. And my goodness, if they had talked about drugging children like openly or something along those lines with, say, marijuana or something along those lines, what the heck would have happened 50 years ago if you had said something like that? No, everybody would have been up in arms because they had morals and ethics. But no, they've gradually been eroded away. Thank you, government. Thank you, mainstream media. You've made us into such a channeled, perfect, socialized freaking grip of society, haven't you? I can't, for the life of me, see solutions that don't have problems with them. You know what I'm saying, Maria? Every time somebody proposes something from government, it's always something that's going to make everything worse for everybody in some way, shape, or form. And the trick is trying to figure out what the heck it's actually doing. It's usually the opposite of whatever they're telling you it does. Legislation is like that.
Yeah, and it is really scary. You know, when I hear a psychiatrist say that a child who is distressed, going through maybe a family divorce, a breakup with a boyfriend, a girlfriend, problems at school, that they can medicate away all of those feelings, I think, and then what would distinguish that child from an animate object? And, of course, inanimate objects don't object to being moved around like pawns on a chessboard, do they?
Mm. Well, I think, but even animal husbandry probably has a better relationship with their masters than psychiatrists to their patients. The laws that they use to get you in there, and it's part of a broader agenda. I think Will has probably something to say about that, bro. What say you? What kind of intricacies does the New World Order actually have involved in psychiatry? I mean, it's like their god religion, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's just pseudoscience, and it's kind of what science is at its heart, and it's just straight out of... I mean, honestly, it's part of the agenda to break up the family unit. You know, I think you'd both agree. But it's pseudoscientific. It's just pretending to be a science. It's nothing. It's ridiculous. And then a lot of people subscribe to it, and you find, well... I mean, I can't even comment on it without coming across as misogynist or something. But if you look at the university structure and you look at the demographic breakdowns between the engineering and science subjects, maths and science subjects, and the arts and commerce, and you'll find there's far more female attendance in arts and commerce. And then you find a whole lot of females studying psychology also, because it's not a science. I mean, it's proved anecdotally, and it's proved in its history also, I would argue.
One of the really interesting things I came across recently, I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but senior lecturer in psychology at Auckland University, John Reid, did a study on the attitudes of New Zealand psychiatrists to our Indigenous population, to Māori people here. And, you know, most of the senior psychiatrists are men, and they've been practicing for more than 10 years. And over 60% of those men believed that the Indigenous population of New Zealand is defective in some way, in that they are more genetically predisposed to having mental illness. I mean, you know, when you're talking genocide... Let's say that these people are biologically defective, and let's give them drugs that are clinically proven to induce them to kill themselves. Pretty scary stuff.
Well, it's interesting. Psychopathy, you know, a psychopath is not entirely different from a psychiatrist. Because they both look at things without any soul or heart or the ability to, you know, laugh or actually give a crap about human life. And I'm not talking about all of them, okay? There's some very, very nice psychiatrists out there who are good at what they do, even though it's not a science.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and a lot of the people who are peddling these drugs have been completely duped. I mean, the medical education in New Zealand, the information that's given to GPs and a lot of psychiatrists comes directly from pharmaceutical companies, not from medical schools.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, on that subject, what do you think of the whole vaccine agenda? I mean, would you have, I don't know if you've got children yourself, but would you have them vaccinated? I mean, what do you think of that whole agenda?
Not anymore. Look, my son was fully vaccinated. I was a great consumer. I was a loving, caring mother who believed that these drugs were thoroughly tested and that this is what I needed to do to keep my child safe. But as I've learned more about the psychotropic drugs that killed my child, I've also learned about vaccines and learned how unsafe and ineffective and dangerous they are, and that the information that the public's been given about them is certainly doesn't represent full disclosure.
No, for sure. No, totally agreed. I mean, did you see Bill Gates' comments at that TED conference where he said if we did a really great job with public health and what else did he say? With public health care, reproductive services and vaccines, that we could lower the global population by 10 to 15%? Did you hear those comments he made?
I didn't, but yeah. Really
did a really good job with vaccines and reproductive. I mean, and then apologists argued that, oh, he just meant by educating, you know, families in lower socioeconomic brackets who have too many kids, according to them. And these are all those grey areas where they start judging indigenous populations. So, oh, those Africans have too many kids, or, you know, those brown people in general have too many kids. It's because they're applying their yardsticks of success and prosperity to a foreign culture, you know, just regardless of their you know, just different surroundings and history and everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's like an arbitrary ideology that's based on nothing, has no proof about it whatsoever. I mean, like, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, okay, this is the one with all the list of different disorders that they've literally made up. They decide, okay, now, if you wanted to decide a scientific principle or some, or a condition or something along those lines, you have to have review panels and have an awful lot of restocking of the evidence and things along those lines, right? But no, instead, you have an open vote in a room full of guys who are all, maybe one or two not, but other than that, all being paid by one, if not more, pharmaceutical companies. One guy was, I think he was tied to about maybe 16 pharmaceutical companies who were sitting on the FCC chairman of the board kind of stuff, man. Holy cow! What the heck is going on here? Literally, the corporations have taken over the government. Okay? Well, and as Mussolini said, if you want to term correctly fascism, you've got to call it corporatism. Because it's when the corporations take over the state, that's fascism. Communism is when the state takes over the corporations. But the end result is the same.
Well, one of the interesting things that that's happened since I've got back from the USA is that, you know, it's really clear in the US how captured the government is by the pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, I've been pretty naive about the extent of influence of the pharmaceutical companies on the New Zealand government. Looked at the WikiLeaks cables, which showed very clearly that pharmaceutical companies had tried to have our Prime Minister removed from office when she was the Minister of Health because she wouldn't promote their agenda, and that they have threatened New Zealand that we won't get a free trade agreement with America unless we open up clinical trials here and make it easier for them to sell their drugs. So I came back to New Zealand and really wanted to have a look at that. And our Minister of Suicide Prevention, Peter Dunn, you start looking at him and his links with the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, I'm in a big argument with him at the moment. He's had 8 meetings with pharmaceutical companies, including meetings to discuss a free trade agreement with America. But he repeatedly tells me he doesn't have time or any inclination to meet with families whose children have been killed by pharmaceutical drugs in this country. He is clearly influenced by his relationships with Big Pharma.
This is the problem with our whole political spectrum here, because you find, you know, I've heard some positive things about Peter Dunn, I've heard a whole lot of negative things, I've heard some positive things about Sue Kedgley and Jeanette Fitzsimmons, and then I know myself a whole lot of negative sides to them, and we just can't find in any one person or party a full spectrum coverage of what we need in this country, of some just common ground rules that are common to everyone, and that we can work off as individuals. And so it says to me they need to be replaced. It says to me there's no point us griping to them anymore. They've got to go, or they've got to change their minds big time and stop doing what they're doing. But it's going to take an outside force to do that.
I don't have an agenda against the United Future Party or against Peter Dunn. I have no doubt that other politicians in New Zealand are seriously influenced by Big Pharma. But Peter Dunn is our Minister of Suicide Prevention, and as families, we trust him to protect our interests. And when we discover that he has these very cosy relationships with the drug companies who provided these drugs to our children with no warnings, no labels, despite having known for 40 years that they induced children to commit suicide, then who is he representing as Minister of Suicide Prevention? Not those most affected by suicide.
More to the point, who would pay to get somebody in such a position so that they could benefit from the decisions he can make?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the whole thing, the accidental theory of politicians just being inept, or whether they're working for someone else or not. I think it becomes very obvious when we look outside individuals and outside even our own country to see that these guys are just appointees of big corps and big foreign interests, and Peter Dunn is not going to put his ass in danger by going up against these guys. That's not going to happen. That's up to us.
Yeah, and he gets a lot more political mileage from his relationship with the pharmaceutical companies than he does with the 476 families who my organisation represents, and I need to shift that. I need to make sure that, you know, these issues are exposed, and that in an election year, people start realising some of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Exactly. It's got to happen this year. And, you know, by any peaceful means necessary. Perhaps even, have you looked at getting on TV? You know, Triangle offer some fairly reasonable entry-level rates to get an hour slot on TV.
Yeah.
These are all options.
We'll be right back, folks, after the break. Oh, we're going out everywhere, aren't we? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. Our very special guest is Maria Bradshaw from Casper here in New Zealand. We're talking about the evil pharmaceutical industry, and we'll be right back. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. With Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Check us out on Facebook, Guerrilla Media, Mr. News, that's me, and we will keep in touch with y'all when the shows come onto air. We've got a little chat thingy that you can open up and feed us questions, or interact. Our very special guest today, our Kiwi collaborator, is Maria Bradshaw from Casper. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you.
Now, one thing I really wanted to get into here was just how complex the whole situation is. It's like, for example, a house of cards has about a million little levels of support or something like that, but if you kick one out, it'll cause the whole thing to come down, right? I'm wondering, is there some kind of like Achilles heel to the psychiatric industry? Like, what is their greatest weakness, particularly as it pertains to convincing people of their evilness?
Well, the interesting thing about that, I met this amazing guy when I was in the United States called Bobby Fitterman. And Bobby runs a blog. Bobby was harmed by the pharmaceutical industry, particularly by GlaxoSmithKline through use of Paxil, which destroyed his life, and he spent years trying to withdraw from, despite them saying it's not addictive. And Bobby realized really quickly that because there's no science behind this stuff, the company is able to peddle this stuff based on their reputation, that people trust them and believe them. And so if you attack the reputation and get people to actually look at the science, the whole thing's going to fall down. So Bobby does this fantastic blog where he just basically takes the mickey out of these people and exposes them for the frauds and idiots that they are. And I think that that issue around these people's reputation is a really critical way, because like I say, and like you've said, there is no science behind this. It's completely made up, it's subjective, and it's driven by the need to make money. So if you can convince people that they should ask questions and challenge rather than trust me, you know, I know what I'm doing, then I think you can very easily pull the whole thing down.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the Achilles heel to it all, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everything that's wrong in our society is based upon us having blind trust.
Yes.
They need us to exist. They need us to be complicit so that they can make money by causing death and suffering.
But, I mean, yeah. Isn't it just sick, though, how our government in the last year promoted their vaccine schedule? Because in sort of 2009, we were like in the lowest couple of countries in the top 35 OECD nations, and in terms of immunization rates. And they said, oh, this is because of all these, you know, conspiracy theorists and, you know, just Luddites type people who doubt the safety of vaccines for no reason, for no apparent reason. And then they did weird things, like they'd had multiple suppliers for the flu shot, and so you couldn't argue, just carte blanche, that the flu shot has squalene in it, which is 51% mercury, because then they'd say, oh no, we're with Merck now, sorry, we're with, who did they say, they went from Baxter to Merck to someone else, and I tried taking it to local doctors down here, and, you know, oh, we don't look at those concerns. It's been approved at higher levels outside of this country, and that's all there is to it. And so in the last year, we saw them boost immunization rates in this country with this massive advertising campaign where they obviously aimed at, you know, Marion Pacific Islanders, had these stupid little soft adverts everywhere and billboards and Be Wise Immunize. Same thing with Gardasil, free for girls 12 and over. On the Gardasil, on the own warning label, it claims that it doesn't have an effect on cervical cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, what it's marketed, what it's pitched at being the cure-all for, it has no effect on, admittedly.
And
it's in three stages, it has killed girls just, you know, dead.
Yeah. And that's exactly the situation with these antidepressants and other psychotropic drugs. You know, we have John Kerwin out there saying, go onto my website, or the government's website, and see if you're depressed. Now, the self-test that you use for depression was developed by Pfizer. It very clearly says at the bottom, copyrighted to Pfizer Limited or Incorporated or whatever. And then on the government website, it says things like, depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain. Well, if you do what I do and write to the Ministry of Health and say, where's your evidence to support that? They will quickly say, there is no evidence. That was a pharmaceutical company marketing strategy. It makes sense to people that if you have a chemical deficiency, you put some chemicals into your body to address it. But that is a complete lie. And so one of the things that we've done is said to parents and people, when a doctor tells you you have a chemical imbalance, so you need these drugs, ask them two questions. What is the normal level of serotonin or dopamine in the brain, and what is my level that you're trying to correct? And of course, the doctors have to say, we can't measure serotonin in the living human brain, so we have no idea what a normal level is, we have no idea what your level is, and we don't know how these drugs work. And rather than people just saying, this person's got a white coat and a stethoscope and did 7 years study, people are starting to ask questions and not just have that blind faith and trust, because most of the messages the doctors are giving to patients come directly from pharmaceutical companies.
The term conflict of interest, the term conflict of interest just pales in comparison to the reality. Sorry, what were you saying, Will?
I mean, you just read anything on propaganda and it's just so slick, isn't it, when they use, you know, former All Blacks like John Kerwin. And so, I mean, I've got nothing against high-profile people being involved in political discourse, if that's what it is, if they're coming from a real place when they really believe in something. I'm against them being hired stooges to lure people into, you know, this false sense of security, just like they used Keisha Castle Hughes to promote climate change crap. And it's just the first sign of propaganda, isn't it? It's repetition, it's these slogans, be wise, hear me nice. It's all this sort of stuff. It's just base level propaganda aimed at base level people, and they get reactionary. I mean, they claim the alternative media are fearmongers. And John Campbell claimed that Ken Ring's a fearmonger for suggesting the lunar cycle could have an effect on tectonic plates. I mean, these guys are the biggest fearmongers out. They're shilling on behalf of these corporations and the government, and they're just above the law and beyond scrutiny. Because if you attack John Kerwin, then people go, oh, don't you care about mentally ill people? Yeah. Don't you want to help them?
That's right. Here's a really classic example that's happened recently in New Zealand. You may or may not be aware that in New Zealand we've recently implemented psychiatric screening for all four-year-olds as part of the before-school check. And the government piloted this program, which is a psychiatric assessment based on the DSM that comes up with a diagnosis for children of ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiance disorder, or emotional disorders like depression. In the documents that the government released to health professionals conducting these tests, it said, don't tell parents this is a psychiatric screen. Don't tell them that you will be recording that their child may be abnormal or borderline. And don't tell parents they don't have to participate in this. During the pilot, in some regions, up to 60% of preschool teachers said, I'm not having a bar of this. Our focus is identifying children's strengths, not their deficits. We refuse to fill out the form. The government didn't publish the pilot data, so I got it under an Official Information Act request. And despite the fact that the recommendation from the pilot was that this should not go ahead because parents hated it, you have to label your four-year-old as a liar, a cheat, or a thief. And parents said, I'm not prepared to do that. Preschool teachers said, we don't want a bar of it. But the recommendation to the government was to find a high-profile, trusted New Zealander from either the sports or media arenas to get them to promote the benefits of parents participating in this.
I mean, this is so Orwellian and so beyond the scope that government should have in a healthy society. It's not funny. And it's what the whole education system is really about. That's one of the secrets, and people will think I'm nuts for saying. They analyze people and they form psychological algorithms and they work out what sort of people they want, what sort of people are going to be slave scum, and what sort of people are a threat to them. And then when you get to university, they come to you and they try and pitch you. And you know, this is what it's about, though. It's about forming psychological profiles so they can map decades ahead what sort of reactions, what sort of what sort of herd they're going to be dealing with.
Yeah,
it's like some form of psychological alchemy.
Yeah. They're set on sick power trips, and this is what they do.
We sent the data to TV3, who did a good expose of that. But you know, being in the United States, I know that they've taken it a step further, where the schools can actually prevent access of five-year-olds to education if their parents refuse to give them Ritalin or Prozac as a result of these screening tests. And in New Zealand, parents are coerced into doing it. I mean, what happens is that when your child is diagnosed with one of these disorders in this before school check, you're told this means that your child is much more likely to end up in prison, to end up being a drug user in their teen years, to end up with a teenage pregnancy. We don't have programs available at the moment to assist you and your child, but we can give you a referral to a psychiatrist, and we know that that leads to drugging and ultimately to all sorts of serious health effects, including, of course, suicide, but cardiac arrest, infertility, miscarriage, all those things that would actually eliminate those 10% of children from the population.
But their fluoride doesn't make people infertile, and their aspartame doesn't, you know, decrease their cognitive function to the point where they want to kill themselves, and all their psychotropic drugs. I mean, they create the conditions for all these so-called side effects that they claim to be saving us from. They create a lot of the hardship, the poverty, the crime that comes with that from their fiat currencies, and then they turn around and go, oh, your son at 4 years old is likely to be a mass murderer or something. It's such an insult. Everything's just 180 degrees.
I wonder if there are connections between the fast food industry and the junk food industry and pharmaceutical companies, because a whole lot of the symptoms and things like that that come out of people that get looked at as mental illness are simply poor diet. So imagine this.
Of course there are connections, Vinny.
Are there? Oh, damn, that was just a theory of mine. I'm hoping it wasn't true.
I've got pictures of the McDonald's CEOs, two of them back in 1995, 1996, in Masonic regalia doing hand signs and whatnot. I mean, that's the link. I tell you what, in this country, it's just an old boys network, just straight out of the UK, and they run everything.
One of the things that was reported in the media in the United States when I was over there was that there was discussion about providing people with statins, you know, the drugs to control cholesterol.
And to put them in fast food.
When they go to McDonald's.
Yep. And then they have a huge number of side effects themselves, those drugs. They're highly controversial and banned in some regions even.
Yeah, that was interesting. In the UK, people didn't want the statin drugs to be made with their burgers, so instead they just got them in a little shaker, like your salt, to take after your burger.
A lot of the statin drugs actually have the opposite effect to what they're supposed to on blood pressure levels. I know because some family using them, and just me saying, just get off that crap, you know. It's just that...
Isn't that pharmaceutical drugs to a T? They do the exact opposite of what their stated claim is?
quite often. And I just encourage people to take this up with their... I mean, if there's one thing you can do today, other than listening to the show, is take it up with your local GP. Take up these issues. I mean, get your facts straight and then go up to them and deal with it, because this is how we create change on the ground, isn't it?
And find out what a double-blind test is, and find out what the placebo effect is, for goodness sake.
And one of the things that I think I said to you last time that we do is, you know, it's really expensive to subscribe to...
Oh, I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut you off there. Maria Bradshaw, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com in collaboration with Guerrilla Media. We'll be right back. Said the person held against his will in the psychiatric office. oh, the enslavement. It amuses me.
I mean, one area of any that just shows just how much of a joke this whole so-called profession of psychiatry and psychology really is. lobotomies. You know, the 150 plus lobotomies a year they were performing back in the early 50s. You know, to rip out someone's frontal lobes or to take a certain hemisphere out of their brain using all manner of, you know, just hammer and chisel style equipment. It's so ridiculous. So ridiculous to call anything like scientific. I mean, it's just so bizarre, even in the time, even in the age, you know, with the advances that had been made in science, the point where they did understand some of the vast complexities to the brain, to think you can then just lay a hammer to someone's head shows that how it's just totally ridiculous. And now, of course, they just chemically lobotomize everyone, and then socially lobotomize us by talking about feminized freaks like Justin Bieber growing a beard. You know, like this is, and that's a real mental illness, and no one goes after them. I think Justin Bieber should be lobotomized. I think he needs to be, you know, chemically castrated. Instead, they're going after you know, the people who don't go along with that pop culture, don't go along with, oh, that kid's a loner. He's 13 and he doesn't like Bieber and Britney and he's not playing ball with the kids. I think we need to give him Paxil.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about a chemical lobotomy, I mean, obviously psychiatry, the history of psychiatry is a history of completely brutal and failed treatments that killed people. But after my son died, after he committed suicide, you know, 15 days after being given Prozac, in an effort to comfort myself, I tried to imagine something that would be worse that I could be grateful for. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be worse if your child had been tortured for days before they were murdered? But when I read what my son himself had written about the side effects of these drugs, and what the manufacturer writes about the 1,817 side effects, it became very clear to me that my child was tortured before he was murdered. What they did to his brain, to his thinking, and to his humanity was complete torture. He spent days with tears pouring down his face saying, "What's happening to me? What am I doing? Why am I behaving like this?" And blaming himself for it. It was absolute torture before his death.
Yeah. Oh, and this gives rise to speculation of widespread sadism in the psychiatric industry, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You really have to wonder about them.
When you read the statistics on the use of seclusion and restraints, you know, after Torin died, I was hauled into a psychiatric hospital. And as a grieving mother who was diagnosed with no mental disorder, I was strapped down on a bed with leather straps and had my clothes cut off me in front of male security officers. For what purpose? I weighed 42 kilo. I was a threat to nobody. I was completely compliant. That was just sadism. That was a way of rendering me, you know, when you're lying naked, strapped down to a bed, you're not in the strongest position to fight.
Well, they do the same thing in prison, you know. They march here, like as it is in the prison movies, to totally dehumanize you, to totally take all your power and yourself and your dignity away from you, right? You know, they march you into the showers naked and throw crap on you, you know, that kind of thing.
Sadly, though, in the prison system, if you're a suspected criminal, you have far more rights than if you're a psychiatric patient. You know, you have the right to legal assistance, you have the right to all sorts of protections under the law. As a psych patient, they can do anything to you and you have no protection at all. They can zap your brain with 450 volts of electricity against your will. They can inject you with drugs. They can lock you up in seclusion for years, and you have no protection and no rights.
Yeah, and what kind of a cult kind of correlation does this sort of have, Will?
Well, I mean, we can't go there. It's 2 minutes to go, Vinny, but...
Oh, that's
no,
true.
I mean it's just really, it doesn't matter. I mean, what really matters is that what they're doing is insane. And people shouldn't have the government shouldn't have dominion over what goes in and out of our bodies and what sort of thoughts are circulating in our minds unless we interfere with someone else's freedom. Unless someone becomes dangerous to another person's physical bounds, then there shouldn't be any incursions on them.
And we have an admission. We have an admission in New Zealand of a woman being forcibly detained in a psychiatric institution and forcibly injected with drugs as a result of her political beliefs, and an apology.
Claire was held, and that's totally ridiculous, and the apology is not enough, and I've got those doctors' names down, and those bastards are going to have to, you know, face the music one day, because it's just, it's not good enough. You just can't do that to people.
And if you judge society by the way they treat their most vulnerable citizens, well, look at the way we treat people in psychiatric institutions.
And that's a lovely, nice, positive message to leave it on. Thank you very much, Maria, for coming on the Vinnie Eastwood show. Plug your website and such, love.
www.casper.org.nz. Free access to international research on this issue from peer-reviewed medical journals to news and to support for anybody who needs it.
All right. Maria Bradshaw, ladies and gentlemen. Woo!
Thanks, Maria. You're doing really good work, and we can just hope to have you back on the show and keep it up. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to this first fabulous hour of the Fluoride Head Fortress broadcast known as the Vinnie Eastwood Show, live from the future, live from New Zealand, and we're finding the politicians and psychiatrists and beating their heads in. In a very loving, caring way, of course, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and GorillaMedia.co.nz. We'll be back next hour. Number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Will, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Now, just had a guest on about the psychiatrist, and what we thought of doing, what I thought of doing at least, was having a wee bit of a breather, because we've been having guests come on continuously as the format of the show goes on. And if people wanted to ask what the format of the show is, my answer is three simple words: I don't know. I seriously, nobody knows what's going to happen next. I don't even know what the heck is going to happen next. It's just so crazy and out of control that you can't believe it, how awesome it is trying to get good people who have a decent message, decent information, to come on the radio to inform the public so that it might save some people's lives. It makes all the craziness worth it as far as I'm concerned. But it means also that I need to be constantly evolving what it is that I'm doing. Because I thought for a moment here, hold on a second, sometimes we have guests on the show who we don't agree with. And rather than maybe attack them or critique them to their face or whatever, it's kind of a bit too confrontational. And apparently there was a guy called Howard Stern who he'd bring people on and be very, very nice and peaceable. And then right after he lets them go off the show, he rips seven colours of Shiite Muslim out of them. So, unfortunately, I don't feel like doing that to our fabulous guest, Maria Bradshaw, because, hey, psychiatry is a criminal element. It's self-evident. Criminal elements make a heck of a lot of money and cause harm to society. What does psychiatry do? Psychiatric industry causes a lot of harm to society, makes a lot of money. It's pretty straightforward.
No, I mean, if we have a problem with a guest's views, I think they should be challenged so they can actually reply to us in person. And Maria is definitely not that sort of person. I'm totally in line with Maria's views. We have had individuals on the show, won't name any, who I haven't agreed with, and I've kind of made that pretty clear on air. Well, that's fine. It's a competition of ideas. It's a free market. I believe in freedom of speech. I also don't think we should need to restrain ourselves when it comes to these individuals, and this train of thought happens to be the like of Bomber Bradbury here in New Zealand. I mean, he's a freaking idiot, and I'll tell him so too, because the guy is helping the climate changers, he's helping the globalists, he's defending their fiat currencies, and he's shouting down any element of truth. So, thumbs down to you. But and he doesn't want to come on the show to defend himself, so it's fine. I will rail on him like a coward without him being here, because he's too cowardly to come on the show.
But tell us what you really think, Will.
I'll leave that to off-air stuff.
FCC regulations, ladies and gentlemen, we can't say any of those seven words that you can't say on radio.
It's all good, though. Here's this freedom we have ours, you know. It's good.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com coming at you live from New Zealand, live from the future, from the fabulous fortress, fabulous paradise, Auckland in New Zealand. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know. Which way is going to go?
You know, it's funny. Wanna hear that? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. When I hear the first few lines of a song and it goes, black sunrise, shadow coming over the skies, because you don't know where it's all going to go, it makes me think of Heart for some reason. On that note, we have a very fabulous guest for you, ladies and gentlemen. Former writer for Investigate magazine, who's joining us live slightly south of the earthquake zone. His name is Ben Vidgen, is that how you pronounce it?
Not too bad, Dave. It's Vidgen, just like pigeon, but with a V.
Just like pigeon, but with a V. All right, well, my name's Vinny. Starts with a V, and it ends with an N-E.
Excellent.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit about yourself, because recently we've had this earthquake, and there's been a lot of speculation about it being HAARP, and HAARP facilities are apparently here in New Zealand now. Nobody knew, and I've still not seen so far so much as a snapshot of a New Zealand HAARP facility yet.
All right, Vinny, well, what I'll do, mate, is I'll give you a little bit of background about myself, and then I'll explain how I kind of come into the HAARP situation and how it relates to the earthquake in Christchurch. So by way of introduction, my name is Ben Vidgen. I'm the editor of Deadline magazine, which is a small newspaper set down here in the South Island of New Zealand. We like to think we've got a fairly impressive reputation for doing scoops on major stories, which we've broken well ahead of our competitors. Today I've written two books on the underbelly of Australia and the Pacific's called State Secrets 1 and State Secrets 2. The first one was a bestseller. And I have a degree in political science and history from Canterbury University, where I specialise in political violence and terrorism. Sim- simultaneously while doing this, I served as a soldier in the New Zealand Territorials, which is a little bit like the American National Service. I worked in artillery and infantry, and I served in a number of roles, including field, counter, and arty intelligence. For those who don't actually know what that means, intelligence work is basically clerical work. You take notes of incidents, these are marked on a map, filed as situation reports or sit reps, and then we collectively, this allows a collective, allows us to collectively create a visual and chronological snapshot of the battlefield. RT intelligence, which is kind of getting a bit closer to our subject of HAARP, is basically the study of ballistics, and it's largely done by looking carefully at the crater of what your opponents left behind, working backwards to spot and identify the forensic signature, which then helps to identify the precise nature of that weapon, its abilities, its limitations, and the methodology behind this is the same whether you're talking about a pea shooter or an atom bomb. So let's begin with how this all relates to HAARP. The day after Boxing Day, I made an entry on Facebook, which was then posted to several other websites, which expressed my concern on the possibility of further dramatic seismic activity occurring in the Canterbury region in the near future. My concern was based on seeing the photograph by Lloyd McFadden of ball lightning over Christchurch, which was taken on the eve of the Boxing Day quake, which then appeared on the front page of the Christchurch Press. I've been basically expressing concern about these fireballs since about 2005, when we noticed that the same phenomena was taking place over Western Australia and preceded the events just prior to the tsunami earthquake in on Boxing Day 2004. I know a lot of people might actually find what I'm about to say about plasmoids links to weapons research a bit hard to swallow, but what I'd like them to stress is that there's increasingly an acceptance for the theory that stimulation of ions in the upper atmosphere may be stimulated by seismic activity in the Earth's core. In nature, you know, examples of this include situations where you get extremely magnetic, active lightning storms taking place over areas where volcanoes are active at the same time. Likewise, passing asteroids, solar storms are all known to enhance the Earth's natural magnetic field, a little bit like a tuning fork, which can apparently be also triggered, which can also trigger seismically sensitive areas. Not surprisingly, much of this is monitored or recorded by the insulation organisations, which I'm going to talk about today. Indeed, much of the research has been carried out as legitimate scientific research with a clear civilian goal in mind. Fireballs are simply a symptom of a wider condition unfolding, and fireballs are produced as the charged electrical magnetic fields come in contact with energy released from the seismic activity, much in the manner that fine coal dust will spark over fire long before the coal ever comes in contact with the actual flames.
And just one here, it's a seismic activity.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what I did, how this all relates to the situation, is in 1995, one of these so-called fireballs exploded with about the force of a Hiroshima bomb over Perth. Now, this is when things started to get interesting, because at the same time, there was a geologist in Australia called Harry Mason, and what Harry did was that he tracked this supposed meteorite, and he tracked it down to the epicenter of Western Australia, where it actually caused a 3.75 earthquake. Now, there's a number of interesting things about this fireball, which we started to see happen time and time again. The first one was that another of the symptoms that we quite often get reports of is you'd hear reports of sonic booms, and, you know, the next day there'd be an article in the newspaper saying, oh, such and such observatory have said that it was a possible meteorite. Well, the thing is, meteorites actually travel at above 25,000 miles an hour, and the sonic boom you're actually occurring is when something's actually just breached the subsonic barrier and is moving forward. So in other words, you're talking about something that's moving slower than 25,000 miles an hour and then picking up with sufficient speed to break that sound barrier. So in actual fact, you know, whenever you've got reports of sonic booms and fireballs, there's something fishing going on there to begin with. Now, what also happened at this time frame is that in 1993, we saw the creation of High Altitude Atmospheric Research Project, which was initially installed in Alaska. It was financed for $10 million from the Pentagon, and it was backed by a guy called Mark Begich. Now, that name sounds... Sorry, not Mark Begich, Ted Stevens. But why I mention Mark Begich is because his brother, actually, Nick Begich, is the author of a book called About HAARP, and he's been fairly vocal on the subject for about 2 decades now. Now, you know, before I get a bit anywhere further carried away, Vanessa, are there any questions you want to ask me for, or should I just keep moving on?
Well, I don't really have any questions. Will, do you have any questions?
I'd say keep going, Ben, yeah.
All right. So what happened was that Harry started to turn around and he you know, found that this particular meteorite actually had had taken place at the same time as an earthquake. The earthquake occurred pretty much about 3 kilometres away from a farm, which would later kind of claim some bit of a media attention, because it actually belonged to a cult that was based in Japan. They'd taken over the farm 35 days beforehand, and in 1995, this cult would reach headlines all around the world when they were the first organisation to carry out a terrorist attack involving biological attacks on the Tokyo subway. Now, Harry sort of got quite interested in these guys, and he sort of established quite a number of interesting things about these guys, and all of which actually resulted in him being asked to testify before a congressional investigation on this cult, because they believed actually that the cult lay behind the cause of the earthquake, and that they actually had weapons that could actually trigger earthquakes. At the round about this time, I think it was about 1998, William Cohen, who was then Secretary of Defense, made a sort of rather interesting remark, sort of saying that terrorists had possession of weapons that could cause earthquakes, and I suspect that he may have actually been referring to the cult. However, what Harry wasn't entirely convinced that the cult was behind it, because what he started to examine was that he discovered that there was quite a strong correlation between these fireballs and also activities occurring within the area in proximity to electronic warfare stations. For example, about 3 kilometres away from where the earthquake actually struck in Western Australia in 1995, you've got Laverton, which is basically Australia's largest electronic warfare station, and it's effectively kind of a sister station of HAARP, based in Alaska. What also Harry found was that, you know, at the same time, whenever there was sort of these fireball activities, there was also a lot of activity occurring over Exmouth, which is sort of to the west and the north of Australia, which is another electronic warfare station. And this pretty much all coincides with my research independently, where I found a couple of interesting things. And the first one relates directly to the kind of the issue of HAARP and fireballs, which is there's a guy down here in Otago called Craig Rogers, and he's been studying the various storms that take place in the upper atmosphere. They have names like Blue Jets, Sprites, Red Storm, and he was actually hired to kind of find out what happened if a shuttle flew through one of these things, and he discovered that if it did, it had about a 1 in 100 chance of basically having its electrics, you know, fried and having the whole thing blow up. But what Craig also noticed was that when he was doing his research in West Australia, they use what they call a multi-spectrum camera to kind of conduct their research on the upper atmosphere. And what he was finding is that, you know, wherever there were these electronic warfare stations occurring, there were also kind of these kind of storms taking place in the upper atmosphere that were appearing to actually have some actual interaction. And interesting enough, if you actually go to HAARP's own site, and around about March 04, they've got these photographs of HAARP ticking away in North Alaska, and there's aurorae borealis taking place as you normally do, but there's also these fireballs. And the interesting thing is they only appear in the frames when the transmissions are on.
When you say HAARP's own website, what is that website?
Well, you have to excuse me right now, but I don't actually have it in front of me. But if you actually kind of go along and you Google just the words high altitude atmospheric research site, you'll actually find that one of those websites is actually listed as actually the official website of HAARP itself. And HAARP as I understand, in the United States, is basically comes under the cover of the National Science Foundation. But what you also discover is that a lot of the finance behind HAARP is actually comes directly from the military and is under the umbrella of what they call Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA.
And
if you ever look around on the website, you'll basically come across their own site, and it's fairly informative. It acknowledges the fact that the military is actually behind it. It acknowledges that HAARP actually does have you know, military applications, or that part of the research has been conducted towards to looking at, you know, whether the upper atmosphere can be manipulated for use in communications or electronic warfare. And this is an interesting thing you actually find, is that, you know, from about 1993 all the way up to last year when HAARP became fully operational, there are these little kind of segments where HAARP goes actually up for funding, and every time you see one of these sort of windows occur where it gets a new injection of cash, in Western Australia, you're marked by the sudden eruption of these specific fireballs, which we're now seeing over Christchurch. And, you know, when you look at the direct nature of what you're actually examining, you've got fireballs that always take place over installations. You have fireballs that, or meteorites, which can form into formation or zigzag and change direction, which I've never heard of a meteorite attack doing beforehand. They're normally accompanied by sonic booms, which indicates that your meteorite's travelling less than 25,000 miles per hour. And they normally will take place, you'll see this. One of these events occur that normally within about a period of about a week to a couple of days afterwards, you'll have a quake directly occurring. Now, in New Zealand...
So are we talking about real, concrete, scientifically verified evidence that an artificial quake, a man-made quake, was brought down on Christchurch?
If we turn around and we start to say, you know, is there solid evidence that an earthquake, a man-made earthquake, took place in Christchurch, you'd have to turn around and say, no, there isn't proof. What you've got is a series of correlations, which is a little bit like the relationship between smoking and cancer. You know, no one can actually prove that smoking causes cancer, but when you start adding up all the correlation patterns, you know, there's a pretty strong kind of relation here. And when you look at Christchurch, you know, what I did was, at the time when I turned around and started kind of realising that, hey, you know, there was something interesting going on here, what I did was I went through and I started looking at a series of you know, just like, I treated like, you know, this was like a normal artillery attack. What were the signs to indicate that, you know, where this had come from and who was behind it? So what I did was I started by looking at seeing whether or not at the time that the earthquakes that took place in Christchurch on January 20th and September 4th, I find out, first of all, was HAARP active at that particular time? And the answer on both occasions, yes, it was. What we also find was that there's a sudden surge in seismic activity also taking place in Alaska at the same time that we have seismic activity taking place in Christchurch. From about September all the way up until now, what we've also seen is we've just seen a massive spike of these reports of sonic booms or fireball activity taking place over the entire South Island. It begins in September and it's been just doing nothing but basically escalate. We've got people have taken photographs. The people like Lloyd McFadden have actually filmed it.
Have we got this footage, Ben? I mean, I've been really trying to get some of this footage of people seeing, you know, aurora borealis type phenomena in the sky, red skies, fireballs. Do we have this footage that we can compile in a logical way?
There are two cases of the footage. One is Lloyd McFadden. I'm trying to actually secure footage from him at the moment because the footage that appeared on the front page of the Christchurch Press, that's actually only a frame taken from it because he's a cameraman. He's not a photographer. So Lloyd's currently got it, and we're trying to access it. I have actually also have a backup source who actually also has film footage of up to about six of these ball lightnings taking place in the Targa. And I don't have the precise date at this stage, but the roundabout date of around about mid-October 2010.
Have you seen any mainstream media report on these instances?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I've told you the case of the Christchurch Press, they have a fireball on the front page. Of course, how all they're doing there is going, oh, look at the curious weird lights in the happening over Christchurch. They don't actually do a correlation. There is one report that takes place on September 9th on the New Zealand Herald, which is written by an eyewitness who was present during the second earthquake, and he also reports the first earthquake, and he also reports seen these lights before, and he's the guy that's done some really interesting research, basically showing that, you know, these fireball activity actually has been shown and taken place before earthquakes going back as far as 1968. The reasons he puts forward, he doesn't tie into weaponry research, and you know, there are natural occurring circumstances where this occurs. The point that I'm making is that what we're seeing is up until, like, you know, 3 months ago, the cases of media actually even making, acknowledging these fireballs occur before fireballs was far and few between. Now we're seeing a massive spike of these sightings taking place. And then if you actually backtrack as far as basically 95, which is the Perth case that I made reference to, you're just seeing a massive escalation of this phenomenon taking place, and more people were reporting it. Well, interestingly enough, there was there's no squeak or mention of it being made prior to, I mean, it's only really been in the last 2 months that they actually even started to acknowledge that, guess what, they're actually, these storms taking place in the upper atmosphere. Now, as far as physical locations go, in New Zealand we've got, in South Island, we've got two installations which directly relate to HAARP. And again, you know, by going and having a look at the website, you'll find very easily on that, you know, this is officially so, which is the first site is based down in the Kargil. It's called Tiger, T-I-G-E-R. And this basically is designed to kind of monitor what's happening in the upper atmosphere and the very interesting space weather. It's tied into what they call the Superdarn radar network, which I'll explain and talk about a little bit further. And the second site, we'll be right back
after the break. Sorry to cut you off there. Our very, very special guest is Ben Vigen, coming at us live south of the Quake Zone. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting everywhere, live on the streams at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, our ridiculously awesome and special guest from the bottom of me cockle places. It's Ben Vigen. Welcome back, mate.
Hi, guys. How you doing there? Hey, while you're on the way in the break, the installations we were talking about with the HAARP facilities that are based in New Zealand, the one down in Invercargill is referred to Tiger. This is the Tasman and Antarctic Geospace Environmental Research Facility. It lists its job as weather forecasting and telecommunications, research into weather forecasting and telecommunications systems interferences. This ties into what they call the Superdarn Network, and there's another facility based in Christchurch itself called Birdling Flats, which is sort of about 15 to 20 k's away from the epicentre. Don't know too much about Birdling Flats except for it lists itself as being involved in firing pulses against into the electromagnetic atmosphere.
Have you seen pictures of Birdling's Flat?
Yeah, I have seen Birdling Flats. It looks like a lot, very, very similar to HAARP, and you've got a big whole array of antennas. It's not a facility, as I said. I don't know a great deal about. We haven't managed to kind of get in there and kind of look at the configurations or the way that it's actually set up. It's actually the Tasman Antarctic Geospace Environment is the one that we actually know a lot more about because it's been publicly touted on the radio and on the newspapers since it's established about a decade ago. It's pretty much done it's done pretty much all what most facilities have happened in the South Island, which have had military backgrounds. turns up, makes a very public facade of it, but it never actually mentions the military funding behind it. South Island actually got a pretty good history of this. There was an activist back in the 70s, a guy known as Owen Wilkes, very famous in his time, and he actually kind of traces New Zealand being involved in geo-warfare experiments in Blenheim back as far as the 1960s and the late 60s. He also broke into Mount John, which is part of the observatory network which runs throughout New Zealand, in the 70s, discovered that this was being used for missile defence back then. At that time, the Americans pulled out and said, oh, we're not doing it anymore. Then in the 1980s, the same institution got busted by students in the 1980s and discovered that, lo and behold, once again they were being funded by the military. And in the 90s, through declassified documents, we now know that same facility was again being used for research into cruise missile development.
Well, if your idea is to deceive people, then obviously you just tell them the exact opposite of whatever it is you're doing.
Exactly. And this is even true of the scientists that actually work on these facilities, because you know, I've spoken to a lot of these guys, and if you ask them, you know, is there also some tied up with weapons? Say, no, it isn't. But, you know, what these guys don't really appreciate is that what they're doing is they're being paid to only, you know, fulfill part of the equation. They don't know what the bigger picture is. And again, you know, Owen Wilkes is quite interesting, because if you go and you look, he wrote a book which is actually available in the library called Protest and or in the National Archives. And, you know, he does a very good job of actually looking at how much New Zealand universities have been used for biowarfare research and next generation Star Wars defence research, going all the way back to the 1960s. He lists which universities were behind it and how much money they were actually receiving. And a lot of this is tied up with the Antarctic program. What you actually find is that the communication systems that they use at McMurdo and their new base, which, you know, you want to, you know, ask me a few questions about, at Scott Amundsen, that communication system directly ties into the HAARP facility in Alaska. It uses the same communication system that ties into the Vandenberg missile-related system, and they're all overseen by the same organisation, the National Science Foundation. In Antarctica, a lot of this material is collected using remote observatories. This is actually relayed through a system at the South Pole known as Marisat GOES. The Marisat GOES in turn fires its material up to a satellite known as F2, which sits in an Antarctic or South Pole orbit, and that in turn then fires through to Pennsylvania University, which is the same university which was basically providing the front cover for the US's defense funding back in the 1980s. All of this money is funded and provided by the United States Navy Space and Warfare Research Facilities, which is known under the acronym SPAWA.
SPAWA. SPAWA with Star Wars and Star Destroyers and all of this jazz. Well, it sounds absolutely out of this world, and it so is, isn't it?
well, yes and no, because, you know, at the end of the day, my theory is that the science behind HAARP isn't actually that particularly complicated. And the biggest thing that people need to understand is that HAARP itself is not a weapon. It is simply the triggering system for want of a better word, man piggybacking back off the back of Mother Nature. In the upper atmosphere, there are these storms occurring all the time. And as far as I can make out, my research indicates that basically what the US military is doing is it's simply piggybacking off the natural magnetic field and pushing and poking where it shouldn't be doing so.
Just look at the steer, isn't it? Can you explain for our audience, and particularly, you know, for anyone who's interested in this Christchurch incident, just exactly how HAARP works to these ends? You know, how HAARP can influence tectonic movements, how HAARP can influence storms, how it can affect both the atmosphere and the
what we'll do is we'll work our way backwards in terms of, if you look at the beginnings when HAARP was first put in 1993, the Federal Aviation Authorities made the United States military and the managers of HAARP put in a warning, because they knew that even at low levels, there were only 18 antennas went into HAARP when it first was installed in 1993, but that was sufficient that anybody that had a pacemaker, it could trigger it to actually, you know, basically fail. They had to put up warnings against light aircraft, because the interference in the electrical magnetic background that HAARP caused was sufficient to bring down light aircraft. So, you know, there is no doubt in my mind, even early on in the place, that HAARP can very easily use to basically fly or interfere or jam the electronics components on aircraft. And it's really interesting. When you start actually backtracking over the number of aviation crashes that have occurred in the last decade that have specifically occurred where there's been a sudden and unexplainable mass electrical failure, when you go and you start looking at the passengers list, it's amazing how many of those guys that are on those aircraft are actually are electronic warfare engineers. And this is even true of the shuttle. When the Challenger crash in 2003, you know, I was quite intrigued because they were carrying out research into sprites at that time, and the guy that was actually conducting the research was Colonel Ilon Raymon, former head of the Israeli Air Force's Weapons Research and Procurement Division, and he was the guy, you know, actually handling the payload at the time when the crash occurred. And the person who was the commander of the shuttle at that time was William McCool. And if you go and you look at his bio, you've discovered that he, you know, not only was he a specialist in electronic warfare, but he actually taught the U.S. fighter pilots, and actually, you know, he was their chief tactician on electronic warfare. Now, the next step up is you've got Ken Hart play around with the atmosphere. Well, you know, go look around. There are plenty of commercial models already actually out there on the market that show you that this technology can do exactly that. So I don't see, you know, how people have a problem when some small, you know, less than a kind of 10 million corporations are doing the same thing for Dubai. Why they think that possibly the U.S. military, that's got, you know, unfathomable pockets, isn't capable of doing the same thing. The third and final thing, this question is, can HAARP actually trigger earthquakes? Now, there's a really good example of how this can be done. It appears on the documentary Invisible World, which is compared by the gentleman that runs Top Gear. I think it's Nigel Hammond, is it? Otherwise known as the hamster.
Richard Hammond.
In the program Invisible World, what he does is he shows you have a large propeller that's moving through the ocean, and as it's moving behind it, you've seen all these little molecules of oxygen being thrown up behind the back of the propeller, appearing like little bubbles of oxygen. And as they kind of get towards the surface, or as they get the energy of the propeller turns it out, these bubbles get bigger and bigger until they finally explode. And what Nigel points out is that what you're seeing here is a process of cavitation, where literally the engines are heating up the water molecules, causing them to expand and explode and release huge amounts of energy, which is in comparison to the amount of initial leverage that actually takes place. Well, HAARP does exactly the same thing, except it takes place in the upper atmosphere. On the ground, these antenna farms basically supercharge or ionize the atmosphere. I suspect that you can then bring in things like chemtrails to enhance the signal transmission of this process. All of this stimulates the ionosphere. This is targeted using a multi-spectrum lens, such as that's available on the Hubble or that have been, you know, put on the shuttles in the past. These target the systems. These storms that are taking place in the upper atmosphere, in turn, using ground directional radar systems on the ground, which are set up in triangulation format, they'll target the area that the seismic area that they want, or the area that they want to seismically activate, and then this area over a period of days will stimulate at the magma lava, all the magma below, causing it to heat up, and then you end up having the same effect as you have with these huge propellers behind the back of boats, except, of course, instead of water that we're talking about magma lava, which is basically an energy form in its own right.
Well,
so what do you think about this fault line that's formed there? What's your explanation about this fault line?
Now, you're talking about in terms of the Christchurch that we have an earthquake taking place on a place where previously there wasn't a fault line?
Exactly.
Is that what you're asking, Will?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just wondering what your take is on that. You know, it seems unlikely that the opposite side of the South Island, to which there's a massive fault, we have this huge earthquake.
I
just wanted to know also, were there reports of chemtrails on the day too?
Well, I'll answer that in two parts. The first part is, the new seismic fault line that's taken place in the South Island, I mean, the South Island, for listeners outside of New Zealand that don't know, does actually sit on a fault line. And, you know, and faults can appear or be all over the place. So it's, you know, to be my own devil's advocate, you know, it's hard to say whether or not that has any bearing on HAARP whatsoever or not. However, what's more interesting, and this is what I'm curious about, is the fact that that new fault line appears. We have months and months afterwards new seismic activity occurred, which we refer to as shockwaves. We then have the activity taking place on the September the 20th, which, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that doesn't actually take place on the new fault line. It actually takes place on another fault line. So how come that one's referred to as an aftershock? In which case, if it's not an aftershock, it's an earthquake. We've got, what, two major earthquakes taking place within a city within 6 months? You name another place around the world where two earthquakes of such devastating consequences have taken place. I think you might find Japan would be a classic example, but, you know, nothing like this.
They claim they predicted it, though. They claim they warned of such an incident.
Well, are you saying that the mainstream warned of such an incident?
Both mainstream and other sources. So there was a
the mainstream claimed that they knew this, but they said that, like, they led us the information like after the event. And one is curious as a South Islander and someone who's lived in Christchurch, curious to know that if they actually knew this was going to take place, as they now are claiming, why didn't they warn Christchurch residents of the risk? And even if that meant simply ensuring that Christchurch residents were much more safety aware, that they had gone around and, you know, nailed things to the wall and taken things, you know, risks away or put in contingency plannings. But to turn around and say after that, oh, we knew that was going to happen, but we didn't bother to tell the people of Christchurch, I just find it absolutely outstanding. As far as the chemtrails...
It just would have killed the economy, is my bet. I mean, if you told all the businesses and all the people who are living there that, hey, there's going to be another enormous shake coming and it's going to destroy all your property, relocated a tad more? And that would have drained huge amounts of money away from the central city. So in order to protect the economy by allowing it to be destroyed later...
$16 billion that is now drained in the recent quake.
Pardon? You'll have to say that again.
Saying, Vinny, that, you know, that might have been their logic, but at the same time, look what's happened now. And that, again, that excuse doesn't stack up, because we've just lost in the South Island, in less than 6 months, we've lost $20 billion out of the economy. And, you know, for readers, for listeners outside of New Zealand, you know, it's not just the earthquakes that have hit the South Island. In the last 12 months, we've had storms cause about $500 million damage in Southland. We've had financial collapses of Ponzi schemes that have lost more than $1 million, different Ponzi schemes.
And we'll be right back because, well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Ben Vidgen is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can check out our fabulous archives. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Oh, yeah, it's business time. Our very special guest is Ben Vidgen. And one thing I wanted to know, Ben, Claire Swinney tells me that you said to her that there's a transmitter on Waiheke Island.
Well, the transmitter on Waiheke Island is one that we're actually trying to get more information on at this stage. I've got a friend of mine that works in for TVNZ that at one stage had access to a light aircraft, and he's done a bit of flying over the area, and he's of the opinion that there's a large antenna farm based there on the Waiheke Island that we want to find a little bit more about. The reason why it was actually posed as a question to Claire, and the reason why I asked Claire about the if she was aware there was any activity on Waiheke Island is that throughout New Zealand, both the North Island and South Island, probably beginning around about 2007 and escalating, we've also been hit by the phenomena of chemtrail activity in the south, and in this part of the world. And what I've managed to actually ascertain is that, you know, wherever else where we know that the sprains are taking place over the South Island, we can find that there are insulations. Like at the beginning of the top of the South Island, you have Waihaupai, which is a signal targeting system. You go to Christchurch, you've got the Birthing Flats. Then you've got the Mount John observatories. Then you go to Invercargill, where you've got the Tiger facilities. So all from one end of the South Island to the other, you've got a series of insulations, which are basically all tied up with the American radar and electronic warfare network. We know in the North Island, however, that we're also getting chemtrail sightings in the Northland, as well as we're getting reports of animals turning up dead in different parts of the North Island, which is a phenomenon happening around the world. And in fact, I understand that biosecurity right now have actually issued an 0800 number for anyone that finds more than 20 birds in their backyard in the Hawke's Bay region.
Well, it's happening more common, and this dovetails. With copious amounts of birds' death all over the world, and even in Pakistan, there were millions upon millions of shellfish getting washed ashore every day.
Yep,
there's something happening to life.
In California yesterday, there was a whole marina that about a million fish washed up on their beaches up there. When we looked at that situation, which is kind of known on the internet as their flocalypse, What strikes me is that the two areas that we turn around and see these events occurring is either on states that back onto the Gulf of Mexico where the BP spill occurred, or else in areas around the world where we know that there are HAARP or HAARP-like technologies based in those regions. The connection to HAARP is that my understanding is that the materials that are used for the spraying consist of alloys which are naturally conductive for sending signal transmission or signal suppression, and that they use these sort of chemtrails as primers for when they're using kind of when they want to send out communications or they want to kind of get their HAARP toys activated, then you'll normally see that there's a in the weeks leading before, and you'll see a spike in chemtrails activity taking place at the same time.
So that happened in Christchurch, didn't it?
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, and again, you talked about, you know, whether there's any of this has been reported at all. The ODT have actually been doing some pretty sterling work. The ODT is the Otago Daily Times, which is, by the way, the only daily newspaper in the entire New Zealand that's not owned by an offshore company. But the Otago Daily Times on early around about December, they made a couple of letters to the editor about the chemtrail, and they were originally quite dismissive, but what then happened was that there were so many people in Otago that sent in photographs of this chemtrail reporting that they started to change the tune. And what's interesting about the photographs that were taken in Otago is that they allow us for the first time to see the dispersal of chemtrails taken from multiple angles by people who recorded the time, and actually it's then been traced back to Operation Deep Freeze, which is a US base in Christchurch where they fly all their flights into Antarctica. It was traced back by Met Service to a C-5 Galaxy aircraft, and Met Service also backed up basically the logic, you know, behind the people who sent the photos into the ODT, saying, well, you know, these are not contrails. Contrails do not spread and disperse in the manner that these have. And Met Service said, well, you're completely correct. With the weather conditions that are happening at that time, that wouldn't happen. Deep Freeze said, oh, this thing was, you know, going down to Antarctica. But interesting enough, the contrails, one of the letters to the editor, you know, took the Peter Drew was the name, had the initiative to actually, you know, go and check out the satellite photos on online and discover that actual contrails actually stop at the end of the South Island. And even though so that kind of puts the Deep Freeze's explanation kind of sinks that one at the same time. So the third article that they actually read, that the ODT ran, was actually kind of outlining the fact that, yes, chemtrails and contrails are a completely different thing. And what's interesting in the South Island is that, you know, while the rest of the world kind of tends to dismiss this, we've got some really good political leaders down here, and we've got Marion Streep and Nelson, who has lent her support behind the Clear Skies, which is an activist group in Nelson that have been actively, you know, documenting and being really, really proactive about the activities that occur over Nelson. And Nelson is right next door to the Waiapa signal station, so we're not surprised to see that there's massive sightings in that area there. And the other person that deserves to be applauded was Kevin Hayes. Kevin Hayes at the time wrote a letter to the Minister of Environment, Nick Smith, when he was the Mayor of Kaikoura, on behalf of Kaikoura residents, who again were shocked about seeing, you know, all this activity taking place over the area, which again, Kaikoura is right next door to the Waiapa signal station. Kevin Hayes sent in a letter sort of to the Minister of Environment saying, well, you know, what's this going on? Who's behind it and who's paying for it? Nick Smith tried to fob it off as being contrails. And Kevin Hayes sort of basically wrote back a letter saying, well, you know, mate, don't insult my position, don't insult my intelligence. I run a highly successful business. I've travelled all around the world. I've spoken to people overseas that have, you know, and seen this firsthand, and I've seen it firsthand here, and your explanation is crap. And what's more,
And unfortunately, that's where we're going to have to leave it. Could you please plug your website before we have to let you go?
Yeah, well,
such
look,
an amazing
my
interview. Thank you.
Well, my website is www.deadline.net.nz. We'll be having an interesting article on chemtrails happening. We'll go up probably in the next 2 weeks, and we'll be following it up in another 2 months with our special investigation report into Hart Christchurch earthquake.
Hey, Ben, I'd like to thank you so much and keep up the great work. And also, could you please add me on Facebook so I can have a little chat to you?
Yep, no problem at all. Well, I'm more than happy to do that. And I've seen you out there and you're very active. And thank you very much. We need more of people like yourself, for both of you, Vinny. And thanks for having me.
Thanks, mate.
Not everybody would agree with you. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Non-busted ill cover in them. Don't let them wear you down, I say.
Yeah. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening. Without your listenership, we would be nothing. We love you very much in a very awesome way. And if you want to check out our archives and the other fabulous guests that we've had on our show, go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. There's literally a plethora of knowledgeable individuals that you can listen to that we've had on this program. So I urge you to take advantage of it while it's free. We'll see you again sometime.